amazing what happens when you pick up the phone and say, why isn't this occurring? And all of a sudden it happens. It makes you feel very good.
Don Young asks voters to elect him to his 22nd term in Congress. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 3rd. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, recording the sounds of Glacier Bay.
If you can get close to a single animal talking and get all the nuances and textures of its voice, it makes for a great recording.
Stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
It's an even-numbered year, so that means Alaska Congressman Don Young is running for re-election, as he has every 2 years since taking the oath of office in 1973. APRN's Liz Ruskin has this profile of the most senior Republican in the House and the only congressman most Alaskans have ever known.
Don Young doesn't hold back. At 81, he still thunders his opposition to the federal government when he gets worked up about it. A speech last month to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce had the ring of a call to arms. He said the feds have been throttling freedom since the enactment of Social Security in 1935.
Do you believe you're in the last frontier when you see the Park Service, the Fish and Wildlife, the Forest Service, and yes, the Coast Guard, my favorite, walking around with flak jackets and M16 rifles and 9mm Glocks on their hip? They're supposed to be working for you, and yet they appear as the enemy.
Young has been a congressman for more than 41 years, spending much of each year in Washington, D.C., and he's not always the firebrand. In an interview in his congressional office, where the walls are crowded with animal heads and hides, he says a lot of his work is helping individual Alaskans solve their difficulties with federal offices.
It's amazing what happens when you pick up the phone and say, why isn't this occurring? And all of a sudden it happens. It makes you feel very good.
But in a hearing, when it's Young's turn to question an Interior Department or Forest Service official, it often becomes a browbeating.
Who brought up this harebrained idea? Whose idea was it?
Do you mean the idea of launching the ANPR?
What? No, the idea about taking and not allowing people to drill on these refuges, what gives you the right to take and bring up this idea? Where did it come from?
He may come across as a charging bear, but former Alaska Teamster leader Jerry Hood says Young is more teddy than grizzly.
And I think Don's the kind of a guy that he probably cares more about the result than he does the way he gets there. And that may be people take offense to that from time to time, but he gets the job done.
Hood has worked with Young since the 1970s and worked for him as his state director. Now he's managing Young's campaign. Of the events that have put Young in the national news, some of the most memorable involve props. The time Young stuck his hand in a leg hold trap, the time he waved an oosik in a committee hearing. Hood says people misinterpret Young in these moments and don't realize that he's drawing national attention to issues of great importance to Alaska.
There was an episode with a beanie hat in committee, and he made the point that a propeller on a hat is not an energy policy, and it was very accurate, and it got people to talking about the lack of a national energy policy in this country.
Hood points out that some of the most powerful Democrats Young has worked with on committees, like Congressman George Miller of California and the late Jim Oberstar of Minnesota, have attested to Young's willingness to work across the aisle, to hear people out, to seek opposing views, at least behind the scenes.
If you ask any member of Congress who's the congressman from Alaska, they're going to know his name. They may not like him, But honest to God, when it comes to the bottom line, they respect him because they know how effective he is.
But Forrest Dunbar, the 30-year-old Democrat running against Young, recounts other episodes of Young's that he says are an embarrassment. Last year, when Young used a derogatory term for Latinos. This June, when he was caught on C-SPAN with his thumbs in his ears making faces on the floor of the House. This July, when Young announced his disgust that a Maryland congresswoman supported the EPA in a bill related to the Pebble Mine.
I'm one member in this Congress, and I'll be damned if I'm going to sit here and watch somebody from Maryland or any other state start telling me or anybody in Alaska how we should be running our state.
Dunbar says that style doesn't work now that Young is no longer a powerful chairman of a congressional committee, as he was for a dozen years, ending in 2007.
Now, not only is he not powerful, he's also counterproductive because he still has that same style. So when you see him and he's getting up there and he's yelling at people and he's belittling people, they know that he's speaking loudly and carrying a small stick, and that is not effective.
Dunbar also says Young lost clout because of an ethics case that hung over his head for years. What began as a Justice Department investigation fizzled down this summer to a House Ethics Committee letter of reproval. It says Young accepted improper gifts, including hunting trips and misused campaign funds. To make it right, Young had to repay less than $60,000, half to his own campaign. It was Republican-imposed term limits, though, that forced Young to step down as chairman of the Natural Resources Committee and then the Transportation Committee. He's now chairman of the Subcommittee on Indian and Alaska Native Affairs, and Young says that's more than Dunbar would be if he were elected.
Can I be a chairman of a full committee? Probably not. There's not an impossibility. But that does not make me ineffective. I mean, I'm very effective in what I do. I probably get more done than, very frankly, anybody else in the delegation.
In fact, so far in this two-year Congress, three bills Young sponsored became law. In a Congress that passes very few bills, only one member has done better. The nonpartisan website GovTrack gave Young high marks for bipartisanship last year and says he was one of the best at getting bills through committee. Young has, on occasion, apologized for things he's said or done. He told the Anchorage Chamber crowd, those who say he's obnoxious and a bit of a bully are right. But Young says he's standing up for the state. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Coast Guard says a contained fire flared up this morning at an offshore natural gas platform in Alaska's Cook Inlet, but it was quickly tamped down by responders. Civilian spokesman Mike McNeil says no one has yet boarded the structure called the Baker Platform. The fire broke out yesterday, destroying the crew's living quarters and forcing four workers to evacuate before the blaze was contained. The platform is owned by Hillcorp Alaska LLC. Hillcorp spokeswoman Lori Nelson says the fire remained contained later today. There were no reports of injuries or a spill. Aerial assessments took place today at the scene. Responders will board once it's deemed safe. Nelson says the cause of the fire is under investigation but isn't believed to be production related. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new book recounts a terrifying night on the ocean.
We went from trying to save the fish to trying to save the boat and our lives. And something like that really changes your life.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quitline can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Scientists know that the climate in the Aleutian Islands is changing, but they're making observations from a distance. While on the ground, the story is sometimes very different. That's what a team of researchers found last month in Unalaska when they talked to locals about the climate change they're seeing in their own backyards. KUCB's Annie Ropeek has more.
About 40 people packed into Unalaska's Museum of the Aleutians to answer a simple question.
We're wondering if, or particularly for those of you who've been here for a while or you've heard through other folks, you've been seeing changes or have heard changes in the local environment that seem to go beyond the normal range.
That's Chris Beck, a facilitator for the Aleutian and Bering Climate Vulnerability Assessment. It's being done by the government groups and nonprofits who make up the Aleutian Bering Sea Islands Landscape Conservation Cooperative, or ABSI. Beck got a few clear messages from his audience that, yes, the weather's getting warmer and wetter, and some fishing seasons are moving around. But when he asked more detailed questions, like about wind patterns or new kinds of bugs, people's observations were all a little different.
We've had white Thanksgivings the last couple years, but, you know, traditionally, we used to play softball and be snowing on Memorial Day, and we haven't seen that type of event.
Last year, if you walked out front here, you would have seen about 40 whales. Huh. This year, not a whale.
I've seen jellyfish, but I've never seen the abundance of
them.
And I know people on research vessels that are going out for pollock trawls and pulling up nothing but jellyfish.
Huh. Everything everybody's saying is showing how variable it is.
Yeah.
In fact, the main thing the audience agreed on was that they couldn't agree for sure on what was changing or why. And that impressed University of Washington meteorologist Nick Bond, who is part of the ABSI research team.
Those questions were designed to get at some of the data that we only have in anecdotal form, especially people noticing types of spiders they hadn't seen before, let's say. What I thought was fascinating.
People were also quick to recognize that climate change may not be the only factor affecting things like fisheries and wildlife. Karen Pletnikoff is the chair of the ABSI Steering Committee. She says that's another reason why local voices are so important to their research.
Knowing that we have all these different variables and understanding what people's priorities are and what their perspective is helps us frame those questions in a better way so that we can get the information that people really need to be able to, whether it's make management changes or protect themselves from the impacts.
For the Unalaska audience, the most visible changes were in air temperature and precipitation. They were most concerned about the health of their fisheries, commercial and subsistence, and they were worried about increased vessel traffic as melting sea ice opens up new shipping routes in the Arctic. But residents weren't exactly panicking about all the unknowns surrounding climate change. Nick Bond, the meteorologist, says that's a good thing.
In some of the public lectures that I give about climate change in the Pacific Northwest, where I'm based, people, well, what's the answer? Just tell me what's going to happen. And when I tell them I can't, then they go, well, get out of here. But here, the audience, I think, appreciated the uncertainties and that we can't say anything like that with a great deal of specificity.
Bond says folks in the Aleutians are more tuned in to their environment. They're seeing climate changes firsthand, and they can tell how tough those changes are to quantify.
Here, it's kind of in your face all the time. This morning, and rain was blowing into my face anyway. And so I think there's that appreciation for the importance of it, and everybody is so reliant on it. And it's a little bit different if you live in Phoenix and go from your air-conditioned house to your air-conditioned car and office, and you're kind of removed from it. And so I think that connection is partly why people can appreciate what's happening.
Bond and the research team are planning a Q&A like they did in Unalaska for the Pribilof Islands, too. The anecdotes that all the region's residents have to offer will help the ABSI group tailor their report to the people it affects the most, those who live and work in the changing place. The draft of their vulnerability assessment is due out in February. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek.
Being a deckhand is not an easy job, especially if you work for a boat owner who acts like a tyrant. In his new book, Dead Reckoning, Sterling, Alaska-based author Dave Acheson has written about his experience as a young man with no commercial fishing knowledge trying to learn the business. His first job was really tough.
If somebody needs two deckhands a couple days before the season is open, that should, you know, be a warning. The guy, old Woody Darwin Wood, was pretty much a Seward fixture and character and a renowned screamer. And I was terrified of him. You know, I went out and hardly had never seen the ocean. I really had no business being on a boat. And I was terrified of him, so I buddied up with one of the other deckhands, who I later found out was wanted, at least for questioning, in a murder. So my introduction to the sea.
And I'm assuming that you gave him a fictionalized name, Mark?
Yep, yeah, he was one of the few that I gave that have a fictional name in the book. And he was, you know, I was 19 and he was probably 28 or 29, you know, and just, you know, I spent most of my life in school and he had probably not spent much of his in school. And he was just a different sort. And we, just by virtue of pitching our tents near each other in a campground, wound up together. And he kind of kept me going. That's probably why I kept on the Lancer all summer, was because of him. And he was like, okay, it's not that bad. I think at one time he said, this isn't as bad as jail. And I kind of let it slip by, but it always stuck in my mind.
There's two stories kind of coming together here. The story of your younger self when you were on the Lancer on Darwin Wood's boat, and also on the Iliamna Bay, working for Tim Moore. How do the two experiences come together and sort of merge in the story?
Yeah, they eventually merge in this pretty much night of terror on Tim's boat. We made a set on the edge of the Bering Sea where, you know, fishing herring where we shouldn't have been, but that's where the fish were. And there's a lot of excitement in that story. No spotter planes were flying, but ours took off, and he dipped through the clouds and had to point his wing at where the fish were, and he was the only spotter plane, and we made this set. And there was only one tender to unload, and we had a set probably 300 or, you know, who knows, 300, 400 tons of herring, and the tender only hold 80 tons, and so we were stuck there. And in the meantime, the weather changed, and the tide changed, and it got dark, and we just had a harrowing experience, and I was almost killed. And that changes your life, and it changes people's perspective. It was probably 12 hours of terror, and we, you know, but also the two stories on Tim's boat was so much different than Woody's boat, because we had a very experienced crew that all got along well, and it was just a wonderful experience until that happened. Until we almost, you know, at one point during that night, that ordeal, we went from trying to save the fish to trying to save the boat and our lives. And it really, something like that really changes your life.
Dave Acheson's new book, Dead Reckoning, is in bookstores now. He'll be signing copies at Barnes & Noble in Anchorage tomorrow from 4 to 7 p.m.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Jacqueline Estes. This week on AK, Wild Sound. Alaska writers and naturalists Richard Nelson and Hank Lentfer are nearing the end of a two-year project recording the voices of Glacier Bay. The project is a collaboration between Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve, the University of Alaska Southeast, and Cornell University, which houses the world's largest collection of natural sounds. Nelson and Lentfer hope to change how we experience the world through a dimension beyond what we can see. As KTOO's Lisa Fu reports, Lentfer and Nelson want us to listen, and listen closely.
In May 2013, Richard Nelson and Hank Lentfer set out into Glacier Bay, armed with recording equipment and a wish list of sounds. They spent up to 10 days at a time camped in the park, often waking up at 3 a.m. to the soundscape of birdsong. Since then, they've collected more than 1,000 sounds of the park, including about 100 bird species. Lentfer says they've captured the gamut of marine mammals, a range of terrestrial mammals.
And we've got things like glaciers and streams and rivers and melting icebergs that pop and bubble as they're melting. Just all kinds of crazy sounds.
Nelson says the Voices of Glacier Bay project was born from the premise that society has stopped listening.
We live in this world that's just filled with beautiful sounds, the spring choruses that we can hear in the forest, and the wind and the waters. We're constantly surrounded by sounds.
But, he says, we grow up in a culture that doesn't pay attention to them. In the field, the duo used sensitive mics and a parabolic dish that gathers and amplifies the sound. Often the best technique was proximity.
If you can get close to a single animal talking and get all the nuances and textures of its voice, it makes for a great recording.
But there are times when this doesn't work.
Like a thrush sounds best if you back off from it a little bit and get that rich melodic sound bouncing off the surrounding trees.
Nelson says the forest acts as a thrush's natural amphitheater and helps create a cathedral sound. An optimal time to capture this effect is after a rain or in the morning.
When everything's wet with dew and you have all these wet reflecting surfaces, so you might have a million little reflectors that bird is singing into, and all that comes back into your microphone and creates this amazing resonance that you just can't get if it's in a wide open place.
Of the more than 1,000 sounds they captured, Nelson and Lentfer each know instantly what their favorite sound is.
For me, it was coming down the bay in the skiff late in the evening in August, flat calm, the sun was going down. And we got into a channel between a big bedrock mountain and a large bedrock island, probably a mile and a half apart. And there were maybe 30 whales in there in three different groups.
Lentfer heard the whales breathing, and what followed was the biggest sound he's ever heard.
So, of course, I get out the microphones, I get set up, and there's a boat in the background. It's like, oh, are you kidding me? You know, I can't record. Wait. The boat goes, get ready, another boat. The whales keep making the sound, and finally the bay gets quiet, and they're still doing it. I hit the record button. The real joy of recording is it just locks you into the present moment. There's nothing but that sound, and you're just reveling in the beauty of it and a great fortune to be there in a place where those sounds still exist.
Nelson's favorite experience recording in Glacier Bay took place in June, on a day when he and Lentfer decided to go in separate directions. As Nelson kayaked into a small cove,
I saw an animal on the beach, and the animal turned out to be a wolf. I didn't have my equipment ready, and apparently the wolf didn't care. It started to howl.
Nelson moved toward the shore very slowly. He sat in his kayak about 50 feet from the wolf. It laid down, and Nelson waited and waited and waited. Finally, Nelson says both he and Lentfer feel an incredible sense of privilege for getting to do this work.
We are able to go into these places and hear the original voices of the North American land. Hopefully, future generations will be able to hear our recordings, and in a perfect world, people will be able to go back to these same places and hear these same voices 100 years from now.
For both men, there will always be the sounds that got away. Like the earthquake in June that originated in Glacier Bay as both men slept in a tent miles from the epicenter. Or like the elusive wolverine, there are sounds they'll be chasing for a long time to come, possibly for the rest of their lives. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to Pilot Point on the Alaska Peninsula.
Well, my name's Lori Abayo, and I'm the city clerk and the treasurer, and I'm from Pilot Point. It's beautiful here. Sometimes it gets pretty cold, but I'm sure it does everywhere else. It's right by the ocean. You can see mountains. Not really too much to explain about it because it's, like, flat. It's quiet. We'll get a barge, but not that often. Some people working up at the school, the clinic, our city building here, and then also there's a tribal office, a tribal building. A lot of people go hunting, like moose season just ended. Fishing, subsistence fishing, like smelting in the wintertime. Just really a lot of subsistence type of things. We're going to have a fire prevention day, and that's going to be on October 10th. That's just like a one-day thing. And then probably like in February, we'll have a winter carnival here. Like the first day is kind of like the kids' carnival. They'll like play games. There'll be food, and then we have dances. And then they do a smelting derby and play poker. Just a bunch of different things like that. I have a 2-year-old son, and he really loves it here. And plus, I grew up here, so.
Lori Abayo is the city clerk from Pilot Point. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Lisa Fu, Ashley Snyder, Annie Feicht, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Jacqueline Estes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Annie Ropeek in Unalaska. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feicht. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. And by Nano Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. The Alaska Public Radio Network, in cooperation with our member stations, provides the most complete, timely, and accessible source of Alaska news, current affairs, and cultural information.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.